Chapter 22. The Merchant's Wife. He was a big son of a bitch, but then most people are bigger than me. Mathis used to say I must have been the runt of my litter. He liked all of us to be small, though. When one of us grew too large, we were always sent away. He said it had to do with the cost of feeding us, but we knew better. The one who approached me in the alehouse that night was a tallish man, dressed very well in rich linens rather than wool. He had a fine, wide-brimmed hat, whereas most men of that region wore only a simple cloth cap. His skin was scrubbed pink, and he smelled like a woman, and that was all it took to convince me I hated him. When he smiled at me, his mouth twisted like a jagged cunt. I waited for him to go away. When he would not, I asked, "Well?"
"You're yonder."
I didn't say anything back. He said,
"I'm Lauer. I represent a lady of the region, a matriarch of great means who has taken an interest in your little curiosity."
He glanced at Risa, who sat on a bench in the center of the common room, while women took turns perching on his knees. Then he looked back at me and smiled. "She came to the contests, then?" I asked.
"No. Her appearance would have been unseemly."
Now, I didn't realize there were any real nobles in this town. He bowed slightly at this, which made my skin crawl. He was an oily fuck.
"It is a common mistake, good sir. She is the widow of a prosperous, though deceased, shipping merchant who, through the various turnings of local law and custom, finds herself at the head of an industry without a proper heir. Thus, I have been appointed to attend her many interests."
"You're fucking her?" He went very still at this.
"It is profoundly unwise to speak in such a—"
"You want to fuck her, then? Noted. I'll do my best to keep her off me for your sake, and no thanks required. So, she wants to get a look at the reborn Siegfried, eh? That's fine, I guess, but it'll cost." The smile was gone from his face. He now looked like a man whose face had not smiled since the day he was born, which was just fine with me. His lips had a sallow color, and I didn't like his teeth at all.
"I can assure you, Yander, she is a lady of great means."
"Fine, fine, but the cost will be dear. My man draws a large crowd, and nearly all of them throw in a fair amount to test themselves against him. There's a lot of earning potential,
Lauer.
A lot of earning potential, Lauer. And it coming all at once. And it comes like that every time, see? If I take him to a private showing, I'm essentially losing money, do you understand? Your lady, whoever she is, we'll have to offset that loss."
"Yes, I assure you she has very great means at her disposal."
"Say how great."
"I beg your pardon?"
"Say how great her means are." He sighed.
"I have, in my time, seen her interests elevated to an approximation of 150 to 200 marks, depending on the subject, and none of them were of the spectacle that your man presents."
I took a long, deep swallow from my beer to mask the sudden ecstasy of greed. I glanced over at Risa again, hesitated, and asked, "Just to have a private viewing?"
"A viewing, yes. To begin with. Perhaps."
"Oh," I muttered. I thought of Risa's battering ram of a cock and hid a smile behind another drink. I wondered if this lady would run away screaming when her curiosity was satisfied. "May I have the lady's name?" I asked.
"I represent the Lady Agatha of the House Mercer."
"All right. And I suppose my silence comes along with her high price?"
"She is a bolder sort, good sir, but yes, certain measures of discretion are to be expected."
"The lady wouldn't have to worry, you know. My friend and I are on the road tomorrow morning, and we don't really know anyone in this town." Lauer looked at the enormous crowd surrounding Risa. They were singing a drinking song, before arching an eyebrow back at me. "Well, that doesn't mean anything," I said. "I couldn't tell you any one of their names, and come noon tomorrow, most of them will think Risa's size was a symptom of the drink. She really needn't worry at all." Lauer raised a hand and shook his head slowly.
This is needless, Yander. She's not the sort to cut loose threads, and her appetites are lawful.
Oh. Well, okay then. That's well.
Yes.
I leaned in closer and said, listen, Lauer, don't take this wrong, but this Agatha,
Lady Agatha.
Lady Agatha, sure. Is she, well, is she hideous?
Is she?
Because I'm not sure my friend is experienced, if you see what I mean. I'd hate for the lad to be, dismayed at the hands of a, you know.
I assure you the Lady Agatha, though not, good sir, is quite handsome. Yes, she is very handsome.
Handsome?
She is, in my humble opinion, the handsomest lady in Echternach.
I can imagine them pretty handsome, Lauer. His hand balled up into a fist on the bar top, and I figured I'd better leave off. All right, Lauer, all's well. Calm now. She's wonderful. I'm sure she's quite wonderful. You can understand, though, can't you? I wouldn't want the lad to be demoralized. And then there is the question of his ability to perform.
Yes, you are quite noble, good sir. Have we an agreement?
I think so. With the understanding my man is not yet compelled to fuck, nor is your lady yet compelled to pay. No risk to either party until we press our palms together. His eyes winced as he agreed, and I wanted very much to smile, but the smell of more money than I'd ever before seen was in my nostrils then, and I was very curious. When'll I bring him around? I asked.
My carriage awaits outside. We shall leave now.
I spent a shameful amount of time trying to cram Risa into the carriage, much more time than any common sense would have allowed. I tried forcing him in first, jamming a shoulder into his ass as he strained through the door, while Lauer stood out there unhelpfully stuttering off suggestions the whole time. I eventually got him through the door, but once he was in, we couldn't get in with him. He couldn't even turn around, he took up so much space. So then we pulled him out one limb at a time, carefully, until his knees rested upon the cobbles with his top half laid across the carriage floor. From there, I was able to extract him without too much damage to the interior. Then I made Lauer get in next to me so that we were inside the carriage when Risa attempted his entrance. A few moments later, the oaf's giant ass had me pinned against a wall. I couldn't breathe, and I had to scream at him until he climbed out again. Lauer and I sat there on the bench, swallowing huge gulps of air. He said,
"Really, Yander, this precaution is entirely unnecessary."
"Don't tell me what's unnecessary. We've made it as far as we have because of our caution."
"Honestly, there have been no recruiters through this region for weeks now."
"All the more reason to look out."
"And you must agree, the entirety of Echternach already knows he's here."
That drew me up short. "Not the entire—"
"Yes, the entire town, I assure you. How secret could you keep a thrice-damned giant? The entire town, I tell you. The entire town, and this is a foolish waste of everyone's time."
"All right, Lauer, calm down now." He was really worked up. In the short time I'd known him, the prick seemed only to have one means of communication, a fish's asshole. He was rather agitated there on the street outside the alehouse, and I started to wonder if maybe he was worried about secrecy too, only he'd understood sooner than me that it was our speed rather than Reese's concealment that would keep things quiet. I wondered about that a while before I finally said, "He can sit up top with the driver, you think?"
"If the board will support his weight, yes," Lauer said.
I gestured and flapped my hands at Risa until he understood. The carriage rolled alarmingly as he hauled himself up the side, and I wondered if he would soon be setting the thing back on its wheels before he finally gained the top. The whole damned thing leaned and creaked under his weight, and when the driver kissed the horses forward, there were two of them, we at first rolled very slowly. The Lady Agatha had a half-timber home in the middle of town across the street from the hall. As in most towns and cities, the amount of taxes you paid on your property was based on how much ground it consumed, rather than how many rooms it had, or how large each room was. The lady's home was, as a result, 4 levels high with what appeared to be a 5th-level attic hidden under the eaves, if those small windows peeking out of the slate roof were any indication. So, she was rich enough to have a home so large as to be considered an estate, but not so rich that she wouldn't seek out a means to save money where she could. It told me things about her. It told me she hadn't come from money. It seemed to me that at one time she had known what it meant to want, and now that she had, the memory of not having enough was hard to escape. It told me she was once sane, and probably still was, that she knew the true way of things, rather than just the noble's variation. The home said to me that she was still learning to be comfortable with opulence. Thinking these things, I congratulated myself for having such a penetrating perception, right before I remembered the place had likely been commissioned by her husband, wherever he was now, and that she probably never had any say in the matter. Lauer sent the carriage away after we climbed down, and a guard stationed out front held the door for us. I went in first before I would let Risa enter. The place looked somewhat smaller on the inside, but I think that was only because it was so dark. The front door opened onto an entry hall with no windows, so there were only candles along the walls to light the way. All along the corridor was darkly polished wood, carved tables, carved chairs, rich carpets, and at the end, a large mirror was hung where it would stare guests right in the face on entry. It was an extravagant display of wealth and power, that mirror. Glass only came from the cities along the coast, and that much glass spread out over such a large surface was something only the most gifted artisans could achieve. Then I tried to imagine what it would cost to have it transported so far north, and was defeated. I couldn't even begin to guess. I wasn't sure even which would be the most affordable, to have it driven over land or floated upriver on a flatboat, hauled against the current by hitched ox teams plodding along either bank. Staring at that mirror in the lady's entry, I grew very nervous. I hadn't realized how deep we were until I saw my own reflection staring back at me.
"Would you please wait in the receiving room, sirs?"
Lauer asked. He gestured through a wide arch into a room several times larger than my old home, tucked far away now under the shadow of Erda's Mountain. The room was larger, in fact, than the entire common room of Herdin's alehouse. I jerked my head at Risa, too nervous to make any noise in that dark hall, and he followed me while Lauer disappeared around a corner. Her receiving room had better light than the hall. There were large glass windows along two sides, to my left and directly ahead of me as I stood at the entry to that space. We were well into the evening, but there were many oil lamps running up the street outside, and the light they shone into the sitting area was made brighter, it seemed, by the surrounding press of darkness. Chairs and couches everywhere, so that I wondered if she regularly entertained vast numbers of people. She must have. With as much money as she obviously had, she would have been a huge influence in that town. I guided Risa into a stout-looking chair that nevertheless creaked horribly when he applied his weight and took the chair next to him. It was too soft, and it hurt my back. I spent the next several moments twisting around in search of a comfortable position and was angry each time I failed to find it. Then we sat quietly for a little while.
"Siegfried," Risa whispered.
His voice was like the rolling of clouds overhead, so vast you couldn't hear, you could only see it or feel it. Sometimes I thought I could hear him better if I put a hand on his chest, as if physical contact gave his voice a path to reach me. "What about him?" I asked.
"Who?"
I thought a moment. "You heard me back there? At the alehouse?"
"Heard much."
I didn't like that. I still didn't know how much he understood. I decided to answer his question, hoping he wouldn't ask questions about other things. "You've never heard of Siegfried, then?" "I guess that makes sense. Ing seems not to have gifted you with any other knowledge, so I must teach you. Siegfried was a hero who lived long, long ago. We tell stories of him, just as we tell stories of Asker, the first man, or of Tyr, or of the rest of Tyr's family. He was a great warrior, was Siegfried, and all his people lived under his protection."
"Warrior."
"Yes."
Warrior?
Oh, sorry, Risa. A warrior is someone who fights. Fighting is the best thing he knows how to do, better than eating or breathing, do you see? Just as building a home is the best thing a carpenter knows how to do, or growing crops well is the best skill of a farmer, the warrior makes war.
Warrior?
Yes, and Siegfried was the best that ever lived. When Erda was young, he bathed in the waters of the Rommelfer, which is the Worm's greatest artery. Erda's blood was potent stuff in those days, and the Rommelfer moved so violently that only Siegfried was strong enough to submerge himself in the current. Almost he was swept away when he dunked his head in down to the shoulders. In the end, it was his wits that achieved the day, rather than brute strength. He tied a rope to a stout tree and made the other end fast around his ankle so that he could sink fully into the waters, all but his foot, which was held by the rope. He remained in the blood waters, battered about by the harsh current, for 3 days and three nights. And when he climbed up on the shore on the last night, his body was impervious to harm. Then he began a famous career, and the various legends of his deeds number more than the fingers on my hands and the toes on my feet. Maybe even more than our hands and feet combined. Too numerous to list, all except for his first deed, which was to subdue Erda herself. She was much more wild back then, twisting and turning through the chaos so that her body kinked and bent and rolled upon itself like a serpent, and nothing would grow along her insides, not crops or trees or plants. There was only the flesh of her soil and the bones of her mountains, the Dvergas writhing through her pores like insects, like black termites, and the chaos all around. Siegfried thrust his hands into her soil, took hold, and pulled. He pulled her straight, and though she tried to resist him, he had bathed in her bloody waters and was now a part of her, and she could not resist. He coaxed her out in the line and held her still so that Godin could climb upon her back and ride her as he continues to ride her to this day, ever forward into the dark chaos in search of the next world.
Siegfried,
Risa said softly. I nodded.
Where now?
Dead. A long time ago now, dead. Siegfried's sister was a witch, eh? She cast a sleeping spell on him so that she could steal his seed. She mixed his seed with her own blood and the soil of Erda to make a son, which was the only way she could attain to motherhood as her womb was barren. She named her son Meatrout, but because Siegfried did not know what happened, he did not know his relationship to Meatrout, and so ignored him. Meatrout knew who his father was. His mother had told him when he was a boy, and was hurt terribly by his father's disinterest. Hurt eventually turned to hatred, as it always does from son to father. And they found each other, father and son, on the wrong side of the sword. And because his mother Brynhild had told him all of Siegfried's secrets, Meatrout knew to stab him at the back of his ankle, whereupon he died. Thus do fathers learn to neglect sons at their own peril, though it seems always to be a peril they safely ignore today. Personally, I believe it's a horseshit story.
Meatrout.
I guess if there's any merit to this story, you'll meet him one day, eh? You're nearly family now. His mother was supposed to have successfully argued for
Master Yander.
It was Lauer standing at the entryway. I probably stood from the chair a little too fast when he called the name, which was lucky. I think I would have corrected him to my real name had I not been so startled. As it happened, I could think of nothing to say back to him, so he only smiled and said,
"The lady will see you now."
I prodded Risa from the couch and led him from the room. Lauer took us up a flight of stairs to the second level, down a long hall, and gestured to a dark oak door at the end. I stepped through it first. I found myself in a small room, small by that house's standard anyway, that was nonetheless packed with yet more furniture for sitting, and small tables everywhere for holding drinks. There was a cheerful fire crackling in a small stone fireplace along one wall, and everywhere the space was filled with shelves lined with books. There were more books in that room than I could credit. I'd only encountered 4 in my entire life. Back in my little town, there wasn't a single book to speak of, and even the mayor hadn't been lettered. The only place I could think of that might have had more was the Royal Library in Colmar. I'd never set foot in that place, though, and so couldn't say if it had more or less than this single room in the Lady Mercer's house. She sat quietly in a high-backed chair in the corner. She had dark hair, almost black, but in the firelight I thought I saw a wisp of gray running along the temple and behind her ear. She wore a dress far less formal than I would have expected, with a revealing neckline and very little in the way of embellishment, and I could see it was purposeful. Her body was the embellishment, for she was indeed a handsome, handsome woman. She was no longer pretty. Pretty had departed her with her youth, but she was damned handsome. Her skin still had the glow of health where it was not yet wrinkled, and had wrinkled only at the corners of her eyes and mouth. The skin of her neck was still reasonably tight, and the tops of her breasts stood up like milk-white shelves, perfectly round, it seemed, though I imagined they would sag when freed from her bodice. It did not matter. She was very youthful despite her age, and I began to feel jealous of Reese's good fortune. My first real piece of ass must have weighed as much as a cow and had a face cursed with a wart large enough to challenge her nose for dominance.
"You are Yander," she said.
Her voice was supremely measured, nearly devoid of life. "That's correct."
"Bring the giant in, please."
She spoke as if disobedience was unthinkable, and I suppose in that moment it was. Risa had to duck quite low to get through the doorway, but the ceilings in that place were all very high so that he could stand fully. I watched her as he entered, and saw even by firelight that her face paled.
"I'd heard he was... but..."
"He's quite something up close," I agreed.
"He is a work of art," she whispered.
The door closed behind me. I turned and saw that Lauer was no longer with us.
"Please be seated."
She was out of her chair and floating toward Risa already, as if I'd been long forgotten. He stood very still and watched her come, uncertainly, as if she might bite or lash out at him. I kept watching her. I saw a look in her eyes that was very much like the look Nix used to get if you put a heavy beer in front of him after a long period of abstention. Her face was at war with itself, hungry. She seemed to me a woman whose very strength was built upon a foundation of refrain, and that foundation crumbled right before my eyes. She laid a hand upon his stomach, and I saw the muscles there jump like he'd been struck. Then her hand slid down between his legs and grasped.
"Well, then," she whispered.
Risa looked at me, and I could see the entire white of his eyes all the way around. She pulled her hand away, and I further saw, because it was goddamned impossible to miss, the stirring of his response straining against his trousers. I struggled to hide a smile and thought, "Just keep it together, lad. It'll get much better than that if you just take it easy." She was sitting in her chair again.
"You know what I'm interested in," she said.
"Clearly."
"Does he know what to do?"
"Do?" She rolled her eyes.
"Does he know the best way to bring pleasure?"
I am unsure, ma'am. But that has never before stopped.
"It's fine. I prefer him that way. There will be no bad habits to break. He's so. Just look at him."
"Yes, ma'am, I've seen him."
"I intend to see all of him."
There was a touch of challenge in her voice. It was as if she expected me to tell her she could not. "Yes, ma'am."
"You'll wish to discuss price," she sighed.
I sat in a chair opposite her and prepared myself to dick her furiously. Based on Lauer's guess, I figured anything under 250 was a firm pass. "Well, ma'am, owing to my friend's considerable size, the uniqueness and..."
"400.
I beg ma'am's pardon?"
"450 then, but leave it there. You're starting to annoy."
I swallowed very hard and waited for my voice to settle. "Marks."
"You deal in some other currency, Master Yander?"
"No, ma'am."
"450 is as high as I'll go. Even I have limits.
No, ma'am. I mean, yes, ma'am. No. I mean...
You agree, then?
Yes.
Praise Ing. Get out.
I cowered away from her gaze like a gutless fucking simp and said, Please, ma'am, may I have a moment with him? Before...
A moment?
Yes, please. He's very new. I must tell him certain things. She looked up into Reese's eyes then. Her eyes had softened a moment, as if she looked on a lost memory, or had nosed a smell that recalled better days. Then they became hard again, and she said,
He understands you.
After a fashion, yes.
Would he understand me?
Ma'am, truly I do not know. She nodded. She approached us both slowly, eyes darting between us. I noticed for the first time that she and I were almost exactly the same height. I might have been just as tall as her, in fact, if I had a straight spine. She said,
Then he is truly savage. How wonderful. You will explain to him that I sometimes enjoy being grasped just here, beneath the jaw. Do you see?
Yes, ma'am.
The pressure should be firm, but not powerful. I only like to feel the hand there, understood? I do not wish to be restrained. And when I move to pull his hand away, I must not be resisted.
I looked away from her gaze. I suddenly felt ashamed. Yes, yes, ma'am. I watched from the corner of my eye as she gave his forearm a tentative squeeze.
You will deposit him very soon, I should think, in the room across the hall from this.
The door closed, and it was just Risa and me. I looked at him and took what felt like my first real breath of the whole evening. Well, you've got a live one here, boy. God damn it. Damn. You know what to do, don't you? I mean, you heard her, yeah? Did you get it? What she meant? He just stared at me. I feel as though I need to emphasize your great fortune here, Risa. She's a beauty. Did you see the tops of those tits? They'll make a handful, even for you. Risa looked back at the door, but said nothing. Hey, are you hearing me? Do you understand?
Understand.
Take it easy on the poor girl, all right? She's high bred if she wasn't born high, if you see what I mean, no matter how she speaks. Be more gentle than you think is necessary, and only as strong as her body tells you to be. You'll get what I mean soon enough once you climb into the saddle. Go on now, you lucky bastard. Go fuck her for the both of us, for my own sweet sake. And I'll dream of someday experiencing 1/10 of a demigod's luck. He looked at me a while longer, long enough for my smile to falter, and then left the room. Shortly after Risa left, Lauer returned with a heavy leather purse that jangled dully when he set it on a table. He left without saying anything to me, and I was alone again. I tried not to think about how Risa was doing. I thought instead about how fortunate he was to have such an attractive and obviously experienced first. My first had been experienced as well, but in all the wrong ways. She'd been a cold and impatient woman, always hollering at me to have done with it already. And sometimes she would say things like, Don't look at me like I'm your fucking wife. Stare at my teats if you must look at something. At the time, I didn't know if I was doing it right or not. But now in my advanced age, I know I didn't. I didn't finish, as they say. After she shouted at me long enough, I lost my nerve and had to stop. She accused me of not finishing, and I assured her I had. Though I hadn't any idea what it meant to finish. I was so unsettled at the end that I had to run away from her, chased all the way up the alley by her cackling and her insults. Risa wouldn't have to suffer any of that. He was about to be guided by a woman, a lovely woman, I'll add, I dare say angelic, through the mystery of our species. A woman who was in it for pleasure and not for coin. It meant he was desired, and that was going to make all the difference. I opened the purse Lauer had left for me, dipping in my hand, and pulled out a fistful. I sat there staring at what was in my hand for what seemed a very long time, trying to grasp what I now had. I smelled it then. I don't know why. It carried the bitter, oily taste of metal. and I couldn't understand how or why metal never smelled so dirty when pulled from the ground. I dropped the money back into the purse and set it on the table. I wondered how much my mother got when she sold me to Mattis. I'm fairly certain I was sold, anyway. I don't actually know for sure. It's hard to remember back that far. I was very young. But when the deal was done, I recalled at least that he passed a small parcel into her hands and not the other way around. When I was old enough to escape the shop, I did, and lived a while on the streets of Colmar. I saw how other apprenticeships worked as I wandered from corner to corner looking for meals. The parent always paid the master when the child was given over to the profession, not the other way around, as had been done with my mother. I was curious about how other shops did things, so I would lurk in alleyways and shadows to watch them at their daily business. Hoopers, cartwrights, ropers, carpenters, all they ever seemed to do was work at their craft. The apprentices got the shit jobs, sure, like sweeping or running the bellows, or cleaning and sharpening the tools, or mucking the stalls. But all they got was the shit work. When night came and the work was done, they all took the evening meal and then went to sleep. And that was all they did. Pretty soon I understood it was the normal way. I thought about what Mattis had given my mother. I never saw what it was. In my memory, all I really see is a brown parcel. But now, as I write this, I couldn't even tell you its shape. It always bothered me not knowing. I would have liked to know how much I was worth. I looked at the purse Lauer left on the table and sighed. Then I left the room and crossed the hall. I thought there would be guards stationed outside the bedchamber. When I found they were not there, I assumed the door would be latched, but it was not either. I supposed she was so used to getting her way that these precautions never occurred to her. When I stepped through the door, I was faced with a situation opposite to what I expected. They were separated from each other by a large distance, he against a wall, and her in the center near the bed. She stood almost in the middle of the floor, dressed head to toe in an elaborate costume that shimmered in gold and pearl. It caught the light of the candles and sparkled like gems. Looking closer, I realized it was gold thread and white silk and pearls, and here and there rubies and diamonds somehow set into the fabric. Certain of the stitching wove into what appeared to be runes of the noble speech, that language forbidden by law to all but those of verified noble lineage, which shocked me. She was of the merchant class, not a noble. Owning such a garment would have been, for her, highly illegal. I understood she had dressed in a grimoire of the kind used in theater, and that she was meant to represent a goddess, probably Ing, which, given Risa's relationship to the genuine goddess, is exactly as disturbing as it sounds. She became very still when she looked at me, and I was worried she would scream or something. She didn't. She seemed to be about as calm as anyone could be, considering the circumstances, and demanded, "What is the meaning of this?" I couldn't. That is, merciful mother, just how long did it take you to put that thing on?
I'm a patient woman, Yander, but you are walking a very fine line.
Risa rushed over and stood beside me as she spoke, which apparently distracted her enough to halt whatever she was saying. I apologize, ma'am. Please believe me, I do. But I must dissolve this arrangement. Your money remains in the drawing room, untouched. Her face must have twisted through three or four different emotions, none of which looked very good. She said,
"Never in all my time. This is completely you. You fucking bastard. Why would you let it go this far?"
"Please, ma'am. He's never been..." She caught her breath and then just stared at me a while, eyes blinking rapidly. I started to worry. I wondered, assuming she was having some sort of episode, if Risa and I could calmly walk through the house and escape before Lauer or one of her other servants discovered her flopping around on the rug, or whatever the fuck else she did. It wasn't an episode, though. She was apparently thinking. She was just thinking, looking at him and me. And pretty soon the anger softened away from her face and she was less terrible.
"Never,"
she said quietly. I got the impression she wanted things to be as quiet as I did, which was a relief to know. No, ma'am, I don't believe so.
Yes, that explains much. I thought he was playing for me at first, but men usually do not play so well.
She looked at me sharply and asked,
"Why would you arrange this?"
I spread my hands and then gestured at her lamely. "Because, look at you, ma'am. That's why. I thought he was lucky. He is lucky, the simpleton. Though he lacks the sense to understand it, I think. I figured he'd have to get around to it eventually, and that maybe it would be better for him if his first was someone that knew her business."
"My business?"
"Please, you know what I mean." She eventually nodded and arranged herself into a chair.
"I do. I know what you mean better than you intend. You come from the cobbles, Yander, isn't that right?"
"Yes, ma'am."
"And that money I offered you, that was more than you'd ever seen before, wasn't it? More than you'd ever thought you'd encounter?"
"Yes."
"Yes,"
she repeated.
"Well, Yander, believe it or not, I come from the cobbles, too. And I know you weren't looking out for him. You were looking out for your purse. You found a new lay, this man, and you'll ride him until he's ground to the bone before discarding him in the back alleys."
"No, ma'am."
"Be still now, Yander. I am not interested in your response."
I shut my mouth. She considered us both a while before she finally shook her head and rose. She went to the back of the room by the bed and rummaged around in the drawer of a table. When she turned back to face us, she held a gleaming dagger that appeared to be worth more than the combined value of our every last possession, including our winnings from the night's earlier festivities. She approached Risa, who now only watched her curiously, where before he hurried away from her. Gently, she thrust the sheathed blade into the top of his trousers and then backed away a few paces.
"That dagger is yours now, Risa," she said. "It's for you. My gift. If he ever tries to take it from you, come back and tell me. He won't be able to stop you leaving. You're far too big for him, though you may not realize it. You don't realize it, do you?"
"Too big."
"That's right. He couldn't possibly stop you. You could come back all the way to this place, and you could tell me all about it."
She wouldn't look at me now. I could feel her eyes trying to drift to my face, but she wouldn't let them. She kept forcing them back onto Risa. When she placed a hand on his arm, he just cocked his head instead of withdrawing.
"I think you understand me, Risa. Really, I do. And if you can, get away from this man. Do you hear me? Get as far away from this man, Yander, as you can. He's not your friend, Risa. He's not taking care of you. He's using you like livestock, working you like an ox. Hear me. If you stay with him, you will find yourself diminished to a shadow of what you should have been, and perhaps after being so used, you will be unable to find your way back. Do you see?"
"See."
Risa's voice grinded like shifting stones. She nodded.
"Now take him out of here, please. I don't wish to see him anymore."
She still wouldn't look at me. Even when I closed the door,